You're listening to previously recorded content on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome to the Maggie John Show. Maggie has her microphone muted. She needs to undo that. To
start Hi, everybody. Basics. Even I, friends, forget to unmute my microphone when I'm supposed to be talking. We are all human beings, aren't we? Thank you, Anya. I'm Maggie Don. You are listening to the Maggie Don Show with my microphone unmuted here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm joined, and I believe that we are being joined from the Big Easy by none other than the Maggie Don Show's good friend, Al Petrelli of Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Hey, Al, how you been, man? You've been on tour for a while.
I'm doing great. It's so good to hear your voice. How are you doing?
We're real good here. It's a little chilly here in Wisco land. What's the weather doing down there in NOLA?
I went out this morning to get coffee. Sunny, 60. I'll take it. A couple more days in the south, and then we're going to be wiggling up that not too far from you guys pretty soon.
Yeah, one of your very last shows is going to be December 27th here at the Fiserv Forum in Milwaukee. Super awesome venue. The sound in there is, it is unbelievable on the Fiserv. I've been to a number of live music shows, and it is like crackling. You can hear everything. It's really amazing. Mm-hmm. One of the best venues, I think, that's been constructed as of late, just in terms of pure sound quality.
It's so awesome. The folks in the audience are wonderful. Your town is wonderful. Your community has embraced us like we're coming home. The folks that work there, we've known them for like years now. What was the arena before that one that we used to play at? It's escaped.
Yeah,
my
the
mind
Bradley anymore. Center. So if the you Bradley, go way, yep, Bradley mm. Center was the most recent one.
And a lot of the staff from the Bradley Center, is over at the Fiserv now. And it's like seeing old friends, Oh yeah, there's a concert this afternoon. There's a concert tonight. But we spend more time just catching up on pictures of kids and grandkids. And stuff. It's such a wonderful time.
I love that. It is one of the things that I think is really unique about Milwaukee. We see a lot of artists, stand-up comics, every kind of music that are like, hey, can we start or sort of wrap up in and around Milwaukee because mm-hmm. of the very thing that you're talking about, Al? Like, it's many of the same faces. People are super, super chill, very nice, right? And there's a good vibe, and I like to think our audiences are some of the best.
They are some of the best. They're awesome. I mean, the fact that we're coming back and we're doing two shows and, people come out, I affectionately refer to some of these people as the repeat offenders who keep coming back year after year, Like, they just want to be part of it. We love being part of the community. I love going to Usinger's. That's like one of my favorite places ever. Like, oh my God. So there's a lot about the community that we just have shared over the decades of coming through, and I'm just so thrilled that we're coming back. And it's only 2 days after Christmas, so everybody's still going to be in a good mood and happy.
Heck yeah, we might even still be, on some holiday time, which means people will be kicking back a few at the show and hooting and hollering. One of the things
that
I want
all night, girl.
Right? Enjoy, everybody. I love it. One of the things that I wanted to ask you, it's been really interesting to me to kind of some of the stuff that pops off on social media and whatnot about how audiences are changing, right? And you've been on tour now for a while since October, man. That is a long haul. Mm-hmm. For your show and the vibe that you guys create, are you seeing any sort of changes in audiences and how they're responding? Or do you guys kind of get some consistent fans that always are careful to show respect and enthusiasm and are kind of there with you in the vibe?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, the folks that come out and see us year after year, know exactly what they're doing. They're celebrating their holidays with us, you know, and I've heard thousands of times, you know, it's not the holidays too. You guys roll through town or we'll play your music in our home from Thanksgiving to Christmas, you know, so there's that consistency. But what I am noticing this year is people are a little calmer. I think every year we get further away from that pandemic of 2020, people are exhaling a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, I think they're okay with enjoying themselves. And you know what it's noticeable? The afternoon crowds, because usually they're the ones who come in and they're a little more sedate. Now they're getting like just as crazy as the night crowds, which is just so much fun. It's a little bit more energy. So somewhere in between those two, I think, is where we're sitting with the audience.
That's great to hear. I mean, that's one of the things that just can be so transformative for people at live music shows is this collective sense of euphoria and excitement and energy that can be created. You mentioned something, Alan, I didn't get a chance the last time we hung out to ask you about this, but you just mentioned, you know, folks play your tunes from TSO, you know, starting in Thanksgiving. I'm sure some people earlier in the season, it's been part of how they mark this part of every calendar year. And since I have never been the sort of person that has the reach that you do or gets as many folks bringing me into their living room as you do, what is that? I mean, that is truly an intimate relationship. People attach all kinds of feelings and emotions to hearing your music. What has that been like sort of over the arc of TSO and especially for you as one of the founding members of the orchestra?
Well, it's one of the most complimentary, flattering things anybody could ever say. You know, I mean, as an artist, you know, what Paul O'Neill created so many decades ago, that people, you know, it's not like they listen to the record and say, oh, that's cool, and move on to the next thing. They put it on, like, when I was a kid, I'd watch Rudolph every year. Like, that became my comfy place, you know, or to this day, if I watch Miracle on 34th Street, or it's whatever is your tradition, to become part of people's family holiday tradition, I'm so flattered and so taken back. And also, it's an enormous responsibility, you know, because you don't take things like that for granted. You don't take things like that lightly. So when they say we're coming back next year, or, you know, we've been coming to see you for 5 or 6 years because this is what our family does every year, well, that means we're going to work 10 times harder to make sure that next year's show is even better than this year's, or, you know, this year's show is even better than last year's. You know, we're working on next year's tour already, you know, and we're going to take about 2 weeks off when we all, you know, get home in January, and then pencil goes back to paper. Like, right now our managers are plotting the routing and what venues are available, where we're going to start, what we're going to do. And then we'll start having our meetings mid-January about, okay, what songs we want to do next year? What production ideas do we have? How can we make this thing bigger and better? You know,
and do you guys like workshop that? Yeah, do you get together with your managers and like workshop those ideas? How does that come to be? And while we're at it, tell people a little bit about the flavor of your tour this year and what they can expect.
Well, all year long. So starting like middle of January. So, you know, what are we going to do this year? Well, The Ghost of Christmas Eve is, you know, the film that we shot back in 99. And it really has become just like, you know, a favorite of so many people, myself included. And how are we going to present it this year? How are we going to make it look different? What's the front of the show going to look like? And then the second half of the show, what songs haven't we done in 20 years? You know, what kind of surprises can we have? What can we do that's different and more special? What effects, what production can we come up with that people have never seen before? And that was, you know, pretty much like a 10-month conversation, you know, with all the department heads, the managers, the O'Neill family, everybody involved. And we'll all disagree until we all agree. You know, and until everybody goes, yeah, that's a good idea. Then we know we're onto something, you know, so it's a lot of back and forth.
No kidding, man. I mean, I work in government.
You know, the drill.
It's all disagreement until everybody's like, hey, that might be a good idea. Let's do that.
And that's where it starts. And then it's the long conversation, because what would break my heart, you know, I've been there since 1995 when this child, if you will, first opened its eyes. Now it's approaching 30 years old, and I've watched it grow into something that exceeded all my expectations. What would break my heart if anybody ever was in the audience and says, I saw him last year, I thought it was better. You know, that's never going to happen. You know,
that's a burden to carry. I mean, that is every year when you go into planning, that's got to be heavy. Like, how are we going to do better?
Yeah, but we love it. You know, again, it's like your child. You never stop loving your child. You know, even though this is like, you know, hitting 30 years old now, you know, pretty soon, It's still our little baby, you know, and you never stop. Look, I always compare it to like if you had a dynasty NFL team who won a bunch of Super Bowls, or even anybody who wins a Super Bowl, right? And all of a sudden, like, you know, you're in the middle of March and like all the accolades are in your rearview mirror and like, you know, that was a great season. Well, you got to do it again and you got to be better than you were last year. You know, if you want a chance at that ring one more time, you're going to work all year long to make sure that it's better and bigger and just different enough to confuse everybody as far as the football team goes. For us, we just want to make it better.
I love that. Love the Super Bowl analogy. Really like the kid analogy too. You know, it's a lifetime that love changes. And certainly the kid grows up and matures and you all get to bring your next great artistic ideas to bear. I really have a lot of respect for the creativity and the collective commitment, all the folks that have to come together to make that happen. These are big tours. We talked about that last time. So many buses, so many moving parts. How many people, remind folks, how many flatbeds, semi trucks do you guys have, and how many people work on your tour?
Well, there's probably about 100 people on the tour. I think I counted 21 tractor trailers and 12 or 13 buses. But then you have the office staff back in New York, you know, who are constantly working on this. You have, you know, it's just a mess. But you got to understand, if you go back to when we first started touring, which is 1999, okay, we had 7 cities on the itinerary, 1 box truck, a bus, and a fog machine. That was it.
Don't forget your fog machine, right?
Never forget my fog machine. Now we got 21 trucks, 12 buses, and a lot more fog machines. But it's grown up, again, going back to the child analogy, it's grown up, you know, over the years. And we never lose sight of it. We never let go of it. You know, even though, you know, my oldest son is 37 years old, you know. He's a grown man. But he's still my baby boy, you know. And he'll always remain my baby boy, you know. And if this is Paul O'Neill's child and the O'Neill family child, then I'm just a weird uncle, you know. But, you know, I love this thing.
Al, somehow I completely believe you when you say that.
What about the weird part? Yeah, no kidding.
There's right? always that uncle. And probably the most fun uncle. Yeah, most fun uncle, too. Yeah. So tell me, how long are y'all on tour for? Like, how many, did you get breaks? Like,
no. How? Well, we get days off, of course. But we will be out here. I think our last show is going to be in Minneapolis a couple days after you, the day before New Year's Eve. And then we'll all fly home.
Ugh. What's that like when you come home?
Awesome. You know,
I can't even imagine.
There's two things I love in my life, you know, my family and my job, you know, and those lines are really blurred because most of the people in this organization, we've been together almost 30 years. So they are my family, you know? So when I get to Omaha, Nebraska for the first day of rehearsal, I'm like a kid in the candy store. I love it so much, you know,
like
and
camp.
I love it up until I put
adult camp. I love it.
It's awesome. And then, you know, I also love when I put my guitar back in my case after the last show and said, all right, I'm going to go home to my wife and my kids, you know. So I'm really fortunate in that regard that I love both sides of the fence equally.
Yeah. Well, listen, from everybody here in Wisconsin, we appreciate you. We really dig what you do. We appreciate the effort. Everybody who's part of the TSO family. Folks, if you want to catch Al Petrelli, one of the founding members of Paul O'Neill's brainchild, his baby, the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, everybody knows the music. We all mark our holidays by it. They're going to be at the Fiserv Forum for 2 shows on December 27th. You're not going to want to miss that. Al, what's your parting wish to Wisco land here for everybody's holiday?
I just want everybody to stay healthy and stay safe. You know, tell people that you haven't spoken to that you love them. You know, reach out. You know, Paul O'Neill's message in the story is, you know, loss and redemption. You know, so we have the opportunity, you know, somebody's always at the other end of your phone, you know, to say, just to reach out and say hi to. And that empty chair at your dining room table, always hold that memory close to your heart. Because like I always say, I'd rather remember somebody and miss them than never to have had them at all in my life, you know. And if everybody just takes like a moment to just kind of acknowledge that, you know, I feel better when I do that anyway.
I appreciate you, man. Thank you for those wishes to the entire state of Wisconsin. I'm going to be looking forward to your show on the 27th. I will try to be there. We've got a couple of friends that I'm trying to wrangle up for a whole evening's worth of fun.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
Heck yeah. Cocktails definitely included. Al, my thanks to you. Safe
love
travels.
Love and respect, my dear, always. Have a wonderful holiday season, and please stay safe, and love to your family.
You're listening to previously recorded content on the Civic Media Radio Network. Waiting for some lover to come.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. My thanks to my producer, Anya Esther, for being here with me. And my thanks to my guest that's going to be joining me at the bottom of the hour, Milwaukee County Circuit Court candidate Rochelle Johnson-Bent. Not going to want to miss that. We'll introduce the Civic Media universe to Miss Johnson-Bent and vice versa. So important that we get fresh blood on the bench. I can't tell you, there are some old duffers on there. More on that in a minute. But let's return to Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton. Yeah, this guy. So, yeah, he went about soliciting securities investment clients without being licensed, paid a fine for that. But it got worse. He's now been indicted by a Texas state grand jury on 3 felony counts of securities fraud. So this is well beyond just, well, I started selling securities before I was technically licensed. He's facing up to 99 years in prison. Certain symmetry there, isn't there? Healthcare providers that help women have free choice about their health care, just like men have in all aspects of men's health care.
Do you know who else is facing 99 years in Texas right now?
Boom.
A groom who threw a $53 million wedding. Then also, I'm not kidding about this, he got in some sort of argument with a cop and fired a gun at a cop. And that also carries a potential maximum sentence of 99 years. All of these things cost 99 years to do in Texas. You can either shoot at a cop. What was the thing you were just saying that's 99 years?
Securities fraud.
Securities fraud. Or you can get or give an abortion. Those are the 3 things. They all cost 99 years in jail in Texas. Isn't that interesting?
It makes you wonder, like, how is Texas deciding on these criminal penalties? $53 million wedding?
I think, he's weird. He's a whole other story. But I think they just roll a 100-sided dice and choose that way. I think that's how they're doing it.
Just in case you've lost track, Ann Richards, a woman and a Democrat, used to be the governor of Texas. That was actually, Texas used to be a blue state. I've digressed. Okay, Ken Paxton, 3 felony counts of securities fraud. You might be asking, well, is it like a technical thing? No. He was selling shares of a tech company to people without telling people that the tech company was paying him to do so. It's like the first thing they teach you if you want to become an investment advisor or a securities trader or a lawyer is do not engage in conflict of interest things without disclosure. And even then, just try not to do that because it's generally not very good. And Ken Paxton spoke on January 6th in Washington, D.C. He's the one that asked the Supreme Court to overturn the election. Yes, it's this Attorney General, Ken Paxton. And if that wasn't enough for all of you, Mr. Quote, family values, Mr. Dear Miss Kate Cox, I don't care if you can never have children again because we have a criminal penalty for healthcare providers that allow women to exercise the free choice about their own healthcare that all men enjoy and all aspects of men's healthcare. Yeah, that family values guy. Yeah, he cheated on his wife. It's documented in the press. And who did he cheat on his wife with? An employee of Nate Paul, the guy that gave him the donations, whom he then did favors for as Attorney General that led to his impeachment. This is the Attorney General, Ken Paxton. I mean, you can't make it up. It's sort of like the Moms for Liberty gal and her hubby in Florida in the threesome, and now the husband has been credibly accused of rape. I mean, anytime anybody freaks out about my private life, my body, what I do in my bedroom, whom I do it with, I'm always like, what are you projecting onto me? What's so deeply troubling? By the way, you know, in the spirit of the holiday, I'll be covering some of the hypocrisy related to sexuality, sexual mores, et cetera, that is just rampant in the GOP. That'll be next week, you know, right as we all roll into the last bit of the new year. Here's what was partially just so extraordinary about the filings that Ken Paxton made in response to the Texas trial court ruling. He basically issued an open letter to all healthcare providers that said, I don't care what that trial court in Texas said. If you give Ms. Cox an abortion, I will prosecute you to the full extent of the law. So though he swore an oath to the Texas Constitution and is supposed to be the person that upholds Texas laws, including even decisions from courts that he may not personally agree with, in the wake of that court's decision that the abortion that Ms. Cox has been seeking does fit within the very vague, I would say, void for vagueness exceptions under the Texas abortion ban statute, he went out and said, no, I'm not going to abide by that. And then he filed his request to the Texas Supreme Court to, again, prevent Ms. Cox from seeking abortion, and now she's had to flee the state of Texas. Here's how her lawyers responded to Attorney General Paxton's filing. The Attorney General's petition is stunning in its disregard for Ms. Cox's life, fertility, and the rule of law. Her current non-viable The state claims that it alone has the power to value Ms. Cox's current non-viable pregnancy more highly than Ms. Cox's own life and the life of the future children she and her husband hope to have, regardless of Ms. Cox's wishes for her family and the good faith advice of her medical team. We ask this court to remind the Attorney General that he does not exist outside the systems of laws of which he is an officer, and that he must follow court orders just like the citizens he purports to serve. Indeed. And I just want to emphasize, in case any of us are missing the point here, that her need for the abortion is immediate. The choice is stark. And again, the Texas legislature made a choice not to clearly define what medical exceptions would apply to their draconian 6-week abortion ban. Shame on them, and shame on Attorney General Paxton. When I come back, I'm going to be joined by Ms. Rochelle Johnson-Bent, candidate for Milwaukee County Circuit Court. So excited to have this conversation. Keep it locked, everybody, and join the conversation. Text or call 844-967-2789.
You're listening to previously recorded content on the Civic Media Radio Network. Kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights thinking how you did me wrong. And I grew strong. And I learned.
A little Gloria Gaynor to come back from the break. We will survive, but we will do it better with my new friend, Rochelle Johnson-Bent, on the Milwaukee County Circuit Court bench. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you would like to ask Ms. Johnson-Bent a question, Give us a text. Let Anya know what it is. 844-967-2789. May I call you Rochelle?
Yes, please.
Okay. Yeah. We're going to have a little chit-chat this afternoon. I'm so excited to have you. You are a native Milwaukeean.
Yes.
What made you decide to run for a judgeship?
Yeah. Thank you. First off, thank you for having me here.
Oh my goodness,
I really
happy to
appreciate you doing that. Well, being born and raised here in Milwaukee and practicing law now for over 13 years, I have been in and out of our court system, not only for my own personal things, but for family members, as well as an attorney. And I know and understand some of the issues that a lot of our citizens deal with. And I wanted a judge to be in this place who understands those things. And so what better person than myself, who one is compassionate and cares about our community, from our community, and knows what it takes to be a good judge in our community. So that's part of it.
And Rochelle, you are not kidding when you say you have touched all kinds of different sorts of law and legal practice. You currently work for Milwaukee Public Schools. You've worked for the Boys and Girls Club, as well as the Legal Aid Society. I just had Colleen Foley on last week. Tell us a little bit about your experience doing these different things, because I'll tell you, some folk follow the money. Yes. You clearly followed a commitment to community. It pops off of your resume when I read it. I was like, oh, this lady knows what's up.
Yeah. Okay, good. I'm glad that that's what it is. Just practicing law, I knew early on that I had to love what I was doing in order to want to keep doing it every single day. And so while money is important, yes, I mean, I have bills to pay and I have kids. Yep. I wanted to be passionate about what I was doing. So in the areas that I have worked in, I worked at private practice at a small law firm where I did criminal, family, civil restraining orders. And I loved working with people like every day. And I liked hearing their stories and connected to people. And then what I also liked at that time is I was practicing in mostly in Milwaukee, but also southeastern Wisconsin. So I was able to see other courts and how they were doing things.
Yep.
And then I moved on to Legal Aid Society, where that was probably, like, to this day, one of my favorite jobs, just because I was a guardian ad litem. So I was a supervising attorney, and I not only got the chance to work for the best interests of minor children, I got to talk to those kids and bring their voices to the courts. And I made them feel empowered in a system that sometimes makes them feel like they have no voice.
Now, for folk that don't know, explain what does a guardian ad litem or a GAL do?
That's a great question, because a lot of people don't understand. So a guardian ad litem represents the legal best interest of either an incompetent adult who needs, like, they have a mental capacity that doesn't allow them to represent themselves. So they appoint an attorney that represents and helps them advocate for their best interests. Otherwise, a guardian ad litem is appointed for minor children in family cases, as well as children's court. So the division I worked for was the family court division in downtown Milwaukee, which is a court-appointed law or nonprofit organization that gets predominantly all the indigent cases for the minor children and family law cases. So what we do is we advocate for their legal best interest, which does not mean we advocate just for what the wishes are of the children.
Right.
Because a lot of people think that a guardian ad litem just does whatever the children say. That's not the case, especially when you have siblings. They all have different opinions and interests. So we represent their legal best interest by looking at a number of factors as it relates to whatever the matter is before the court. So custody, placement, whether usually the main issues, but there could be in children's court termination of parental rights. There can be guardianship. So there's lots of issues that deal with children.
It's an incredibly important role within our legal system, and one that many, many people are entirely unfamiliar about. And it sits in this very unique place. A GAL may, in fact, be sort of in the middle of, as you put it, a custody battle between two parents. And the court while either parent is being potentially represented by lawyers, the court wants someone to talk to the child,
yes,
and have some idea about the child's perspective, as well as a third party independent legal expert, a lawyer, mm-hmm, saying what they believe is in the child's best interest.
Exactly.
On behalf of all of us. And I don't care whether you've never heard about a GAL or not. The work that GALs do benefit our entire community. It's so, yes, essential. So on behalf of all of us, thank you for that work. You moved on to work in compliance for the Boys and Girls Club. Tell me what that's like.
Yeah.
How'd you end up at MPS?
That's kind of a transition there. So I switched over to me, it's kind of like a flip. Working in litigation, going to court every day, working with children and directly to going in, to compliance and contracts, which is kind of different. You're not, it's more transactional law.
Yep.
But the thing is, I wanted to still work with kids. I wanted to still advocate for the needs of our children. So that's what brought me to Boys and Girls Club. Being the director of compliance, I helped set up their whistleblowing and compliance department, as well as their contract process. Because at that time, while there were a lot of contracts in place, especially on the higher level,
yep,
there wasn't so many of the contracts in place for the everyday contracts between a vendor and the each individual club.
Some of the smaller stuff that they do. And whistleblowing, yeah, we've talked about it on my show. I don't care what level of business or government you're at, protecting whistleblowers and having whistleblower processes, protections, so essential. And most recently, you've been working at MPS. Tell us a little bit about that.
So that kind of transitioned me to MPS because I was at Boys and Girls Club and I was doing the contracts. And I guess I was giving them a little hard time, as they put. They were saying, we'd rather have you on our side of things. So when they had an opening in their contract law specialist department, a few of them kind of nudged me and was like, you think you should apply? And so I was like, oh, well, you know, let's see. And so, yeah, I came over to Milwaukee Public Schools. I absolutely love it. I have a wonderful team. I'm the managing attorney over the procurement and risk management and contract law specialist. So I get to see all the contracts again, as well as I deal with the workers' comp, risk management assessments, and we're trying to figure out how to keep our kids safe, our staff safe. Yep. Those assessments are coming through me in terms of reviewing that and then presenting the information to our, whether it be like leadership, yep, or board or whoever.
So for folks that might not be able to extrapolate from everything that Rochelle has shared with us, what you have here is an incredibly well-rounded attorney who has seen basically every different side of the law, from private practice and representing individual clients to doing GAL work, which has an independent element to it, to now looking at contracts and big entities that engage in day-to-day contract work that impact our entire community. My personal opinion, I'm going to go ahead and say it because I do it all day on this radio show, is that having attorneys with that kind of a well-rounded background is absolutely essential as, yes, a precondition for judges. It's great when somebody's been a lifelong thus and such, right?
Yes.
You know that one area of the law, but boy, judges generally don't sit in one sort of courtroom for,
exactly,
their whole life. So tell me a little bit about your approach, your thinking about whether it's judicial philosophy, the gaps that you might see on the bench today, why you're the gal for this circuit court opening.
That's probably one of my favorite questions I get. The biggest and most simplest way I say it is I want to bridge those gaps of inequities when people come into the courtroom. And what I mean by that is because I've now represented children, because I've now seen pro se litigants in court, I've been in the opposite side of things where people are negotiating workers' comp settlements. People don't understand the process. And our system is made to kind of confuse people.
It certainly ain't made to make it easy.
Right.
Maybe not intentionally confusing, but we've certainly got there.
Yes. And so one of the things that I feel like I'm really good at is explaining the process and understanding and making people feel like they're part of the process. Make sure that when you come into courtroom, if you came in my courtroom, I want you to remind yourself every time you walk out, like, okay, she was trying to explain that to me. Yes. She wanted me to understand because she wants me to remind myself that this is my hearing. This is my case. For the family members that come in the courtroom, not necessarily be recognized where I speak to you or have to necessarily, I'll speak to families if I can, but speak to you in terms of where I'm making you say something, but you should feel seen when you come into our court system. And Milwaukee County is its own beast, right? It's not like any other county in the state. It's very, very intimidating. And so when we get a judge who understands the process, you should be able to articulate that to everyone who comes in your courtroom. And you should speak in a language and use vocabulary that people can understand. You should make sure before a litigant even walks out that you have a translator that can tell them about what they need and what's the next process and what they need to do.
And resources for those things.
Yes.
We are going to be friends because what I say to lawyers all the time is stop talking like a lawyer.
Yes.
If you're talking in technical terminology and coded language, and I keep asking you to like explain it better, and you can't do that. Yes. You know what I think, Rochelle? You don't understand.
Say that all the time.
Okay, friend.
Okay, so I trained a lot of GALs. I trained a lot of attorneys. Even when I was in private practice, we had a lot of interns that came in. We had a lot of new associates. And I used to say to people all the time, if you can't articulate this case to someone, if they seem confused about the process, it's because you don't understand it. And it's as simple as that.
It really is. And there are so many points where by taking that extra step to explain things to people in a way that is not condescending,
yes,
or disrespectful, that shows some care for where people are, mm-hmm, you can be incredibly impactful in my own language, try to summarize what you're saying, giving some people a feeling of agency.
Yes.
And a process and in a system that makes people feel like they're just getting run over by
completely.
It.
Completely. And you just feel like, you know, you come into court, and I mean, I know people who like feel like they had a really good case and they felt like I'm the victim coming into court and I still don't feel heard. I feel like no one even cares I'm here. And that's not good. We don't want that. And I remember even to explain a little bit deeper about what I mean when I say this is, even if I don't represent you, you're not my client. There's a lot of times where parents came back to me and said to me when I was a GAL, I don't represent them. They'll say, even though you weren't giving me any information that shows you were biased or anything, you gave me hope. Like you told me what I just need to bring to the next hearing because I couldn't read the handwriting of the judges or the commissioner. You know, I will send a letter just to remind both parties of the next court date, even though they get the court dates and they get an extra phone call, get an extra letter. Now, obviously, judges can't do all those things, but just that extra little small step that you can take just to show someone that you want them to be part of the process just makes it so much different for everyone coming into court. So I care about people wanting to be part of the process. And so when I talk about that inequities that we want to break down, that's what I'm referring to.
Yeah, it's a process that's supposed to be designed to help people resolve conflicts, you know, at times mete out punishments, adjudge guilt and innocence. Yeah. These are things that I joke with folk all the time. Like if you're coming into the Milwaukee courthouse and it's not for like a marriage license or some event, this is probably not the best moment in your life.
Usually not, right?
People are scared. It's high stress. Then
hard to find parking.
I was just going to say, you got to find the darn parking. You don't know where you're going. It's like, oh, that's in the safety building. We have about 40 seconds left.
Okay.
Tell everybody why they're going to vote for Ms. Rochelle Johnson Bent and where they can find your campaign website.
Okay. The reason why people should vote for me is one, I come with experience, not only with trial, but in litigation, as well as a variety of areas in which we talked about. I'm compassionate about our community. If you look at any or know anything about me, you'll know, like you said, my jobs that I worked in, the community involvement, the state bar, I was a board member. So I stay involved in all things legal, as well as our community. And I know and understand the issues. Plus myself, I'm a mom. So I understand and relate to the issues that a lot of the people who are going into these courtrooms are dealing with, whether it be just caring about their coming back to court in only 2 days. You know, that's not easy for a lot of people.
Give them the website.
So the website is Rochelle4JudgeMKE.com. And that's 4 like the number.
You're listening to previously recorded content on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Que voy a pelear por él. Sueñes que voy a luchar por él. Yo te lo regalo. Llévatelo lejos. Él es mala suerte. Y yo no lo
back, everybody. If you don't know the lyrics to that song, Anya certainly does. So fantastic. I don't even think I'll fight you for him. Don't even dream I'd fight for him. He's my gift. Take him far away because he's bad luck and I don't love him. The best revenge will be when you stay with him. Oh, and it goes on. This is my favorite part of the lyrics here. You'll discover his secret and like a suffering soul, you'll live to the end mortally wounded by love while I laugh. My gift to you, my friends. Thank you, Anya.
Of course.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. She's Anya Esther, and we are joined now by Civic Media's very own Terry Barr. Welcome, Terry. How you doing?
Hello. How are you? Your music game is very strong tonight.
That is all Anya.
Thanks, Terry.
I just get to tell her how much I love it.
I do too. It's really fun to hear. And you know, it kind of goes into maybe a little bit about what's been local and overlooked in the last couple of days in Wisconsin. How about this, Maggie? Let's talk about property taxes. You know, we really don't discuss this enough. And the Wisconsin Policy Forum just put out a new report showing more than 4.5% increase from last year on your property tax bills. And of course, those should be arriving in your mailbox any day now. This increase, even despite the bipartisan deal to boost the shared revenue, and that of course is money that goes out from the state to local cities or villages, counties, and local leaders then can decide what they need to use the money for. What's getting the blame for this? Well, inflation and so many local efforts to raise property taxes to support education projects. Now, this 4.5%+ increase is the largest to happen since 2007. And yes, Wisconsin maintains its 8th highest for taxes, property taxes, out of all 50 states. I say ouch to that.
It's pretty incredible. And, so it I used is. To actually, I used to actually, I used to deal legally with property tax assessments quite frequently, and you could make a pretty solid argument that consumer goods inflation and inflation overall shouldn't really impact an individual year's property tax assessment. In other words, property tax assessments effectively should be using an economic algorithm that is smoothing property values over many years, because people don't buy a house for a year and then sell it in the vast majority of situations, right? That's not that kind of a marketplace. And so it's interesting to me that an explanation would be posited as like, oh, well, there's inflation. Yes, well, it will go down, and it is down, and it's only at like 3.5% right now, and it's on its way down. So that doesn't really carry a lot of water with me as an economist. Boy, they're going for the gusto, aren't they, Terry? What's your second local and overlooked story of the week?
This, I think, is very cool, and it comes out of a sad situation, but she is making the most of it. A local woman starting to deliver overdose aid kits to businesses all around the state is her hope as an effort to stop overdose deaths. Her name is Jessica Geschke. She's from Cottage Grove, and she witnessed a family member overdose on opioids. They had to call the police because she didn't know what to do. She didn't have any of the items she needed to be able to help this person. Sad story there. That person did recover, but she was so traumatized by it. She said, I need to stop these overdose deaths. So putting together these kits that have everything you need and how to use it. And she really wants business owners to put these right next to, say, your AED or your first aid kits. And state health officials did say 1,400 people died from overdoses in Wisconsin last year. If you want to get a little more information, she has a website started now, too. It's start healingnow.org. And hats off to her for doing this.
How absolutely wonderful. That's Jessica Geske of Cottage Grove giving to businesses so that they can give to mm-hmm. members of the public, I assume, for zero cost. Basically,
exactly.
It's to avoid the overdoses, right?
Right. Right. And, you know, it came again because she actually witnessed someone in her family overdosing. She didn't have any of the items she's putting in these kits, so she didn't know what to do. So they had to call the police. But she said, you know, so often it's so stigmatized, overdosing. And you know, it's hard when you do need the help. And she said, I don't want people to feel like they can't walk in somewhere and get some help. And
that's wonderful. Thank you so much, Terry. And hats off to Jessica of Cottage Grove. Just a little point of fact, here in Milwaukee County, many, many, many county facilities have free harm reduction vending machines. You can get gun locks for free. You can get Narcan for free. All sorts of health supporting, community supporting items also for free. And it ties in, Terry, perfectly. Thank you so much for being here. Ties in perfectly. The reason that I was on Fox and Friends is because in my capacity, in my day job, I sued the opioid manufacturers and distributors on behalf of Milwaukee County and all of its residents, citizens, taxpayers, and tourists back in 2018. That's how the harm reduction vending machines here in Milwaukee County got funded. And I went on Fox and Friends and they tried to get me with one of their gotcha questions, but I got them back. We're going to find that audio and bring it to you next week here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Be safe out there, everybody. And man, if I was Giannis's brother, I would have come flying off the bench too when one of those mean Pacers body slammed him. Then they don't even give him the basketball where he scored the franchise record 64 points. What the heck's wrong with the Pacers, man? You're supposed to be from Indiana nice. The GOAT, man, Giannis Antetokounmpo. It's been a great week of the Maggie Dawn Show. My thanks to Terry Barr of the Civic Media Radio Network, and of course you, Anya. I love you. Everybody be safe out there. Happy Hanukkah, Festival of Lights. Get together, sport.